chick here and a chick chick there. Here a chick, everywhere a chick chick. Old MacDonald had a farm, E-I-E-I-O. Old MacDonald had a farm, E-I-E-I-O. And on this farm he had a cow, E-I-E-I-O.
Where in the heck is Andy going with this morning? I don't know, folks. This is an amazing story on several levels. First of all, great food. We're going to talk about great food. The Wine and Food Show is coming up this weekend, and we got one particular person at the show we want to tell you about so you can go visit him. There's another headline to this. An amazing farmer. I drive through the town of Glencoe, I would say almost weekly. It's very near my hometown of Albertson. I used to play basketball in Glencoe. And Glencoe, by the way, just now deserves our full respect because it has two things that make a small town, and that is a stoplight and a Tim Hortons. And it now has both, thanks to Matt Hogendorn, who is just Hogan Boom, rather, who has just set up a Tim Hortons. So this is a story about an amazing farmer. And it's also proof that life doesn't end at 65. I mean, you think people over 65 are old. Pam Colleen joins us this morning. Pam, you're telling me things about virtually my hometown, Glencoe. I am just shocked by, and that is there's a conference hall in a silo in near the town of Glencoe, 30 minutes from London, and I didn't know about
it? That's right. This is an amazing structure. It's a silo, and within the silo, there's basically, you know, bedrooms and showers and a kitchen and a speaking hall, and it's been put together by a farmer by the name of Stuart Simpson, who's into his 90s now. And Stuart's lifelong passion, essentially, has been to produce the healthiest food possible, the most nutrient-dense food possible. And several years ago, he set out to find the healthiest, most nutrient-dense breed of cattle that consumers could ever want for, essentially. And so he did a lot of research to seek out genetic lineage and find a breed of cattle, essentially, that is best suited for being grass-fed. And this is important to me because, essentially, today, finding grass-fed beef is very difficult to do, but finding really high-quality grass-fed beef is even harder to do. So many times you'll go to a store and look for grass-fed beef, and it may only be grass-finished. It may say lean on the package, so unfortunately it's not fatty. And these are not the grass-fed beef products that you want to find. What you want to find is grass-fed beef that has this beautiful fat in it that is almost yellow simply because the animal has been eating lots and lots of grass, and so the animal's been getting lots of the carotenoids to make the fat nice and yellow. But there's going to be more nutrition in this grass-fed beef, and you know, essentially that means more of these fat-soluble vitamins that we often talk about, but it's also going to be higher in minerals. And so it's very, very nutrient dense, but it's very difficult to find a farmer who has a herd that is designed for grass feeding. So Stuart Simpson set out to find a very pure type of cattle that is going to be best for grass feeding. And that's what they're presenting at the Food and Wine Show, or the Wine and Food Show, as it's known right now.
We'll get to that in just a moment. Back to the silo. I am so intrigued because when I was a kid on the farm, I spent a lot of time in silos. How do you take a silo, which is meant for silage, corn, when you just dump it in the top and then take it out the bottom? How do you turn that into a
conference hall? He built it all. He's been building it all by hand. I mean, essentially, he gutted, you know, the silo so that it would be appropriate to put floors in it. And it's basically just a tiny version of a convention center. So he can actually invite people from around the world who want to taste this beef. And they do educational classes on it and teach people about the importance of this type of grass-fed beef. And they can actually taste and sample it.
Tim, I mean, I drive through Glencoe all the time. And here Pam's telling me about the Stuart Simpson, the farmer who built a conference hall inside of a silo. And Andy didn't know. Absolutely amazing.
I've been inside of it. It's really charming. It's amazing.
Well, it's certainly unique, and this chap has his own website.
It's a WordPress website, but it's called Old River Farm. So if you Google in Old River Farm, and of course his name is Stuart Simpson, you should find his website.
Okay, so we're going to talk about real beef. You haven't apparently had beef. You have not had a steak until you have Stuart Simpson's steak. And being a farm kid, I should know this name of this cattle. Never heard of it. Devon, is that how you pronounce
it? Devon, yeah. And it's genetically linked to, as far away as New Zealand, actually.
So, okay, so let's set this all up with the woman whose face, and I have a friend, Rich Grevin, who would say she has an unkind face. who you think of when you think of the word beef. Remember that classic commercial?
Hey, where's the beef? I don't think there's anybody back there.
You want something better. You're Wendy's kind of people.
Clara Peller lives. Play it again, if you would, Tim. This is Clara Peller. God bless her. What a commercial that was. Clara Peller asking provocative question, where's the beef? Pam, real beef, you're saying the cattle cannot be corn-fed. Why this focus on the cattle being grass-fed instead of corn-fed?
Well, before World War II, about 90% of the beef cattle in the United States was grass-fed, and it just became more convenient to enclose the animals and feed them foods that, unfortunately, they're not designed for, and that would be things like corn and soy. And so the consumer has been essentially blindsided, duped into thinking that corn feeding an animal is a good thing. But it's not a good thing. These animals are designed for eating grass. They should be out eating grass. You're going to get a healthier product. You're going to get, obviously, a healthier animal when they're out grazing on grass and basking in the sunshine where they should be.
If cattle had the choice, by the way, never thought of this, and you had the barn with the silage and the corn, or you had the grass outside, which do you think
they're going to be outside? They know. Animals know. I mean, even when it comes to GMO corn, for example, the farmers that I know personally have told me, if you give animals a choice between GMO corn and non-GMO corn, any animal that even is designed to eat corn, they're going to reject the GMO corn.
There we go. Okay, Clara Peller, one more time. Here we go.
Where's the beef? I don't think there's anybody back there.
You want something better.
I don't think there's anybody back there.
You want something better. You're Wendy's kind of people.
Oh, Clara Peller put Wendy's on the map. Okay, we have a guest this morning, and he is a friend of this farmer.
He's a friend of Stuart Simpson's. He's going to be at the Wine and Food Show this weekend. And he's helping Stuart market for the first time to consumers so people can come and either buy or taste this first herd of cattle that he's brought into Canada. So John Field is helping Stuart out this weekend, and he's here with us this morning.
Pam, it's my wacky sense of humor, but I just love when a person's name relates to what it is they're doing or promoting. So here's a guy promoting sustainable local agriculture, and what's his name? John Field. You can't make this stuff up. Good morning, John.
Good morning, Andy.
My jaw dropped when Pam just told me the story about this silo near Glencoe.
Well, I've been around since the conception of the silo, so it is wonderful to see that it's now actually usable. We just, a couple of weeks ago, finished planning the kitchen that we can serve meals in the conference area.
Well, and the conference area... I mean, not that I don't believe Pam, but it's in the silo?
It's in the silo, and there is an observation deck around the outside so that you can go, and the river farm is, needless to say, on the Thames River, and you can look out over the Thames as it travels through Stuart's farm, and you can also see the grazing of the Devon cattle.
So there's an observation deck around the outside of the perimeter of the silo?
Yes.
And his cattle are happy cattle. They've got lots of acreage to graze on there, don't they?
Yes, they do.
Okay, now this is an amazing story on several levels. First of all, Stuart Simpson, the man. My goodness, he's into his 90s. He's doing something right. What's he doing right?
Well, I think like Pam said, like he's, I've known him for 16 or 17 years, and he's always been searching for the best quality food. And so his latest mission was to go in search of this beef. And it 2+ years ago, he bought Devon's in two states, I think Ohio and Pennsylvania, and brought them over to his farm. And just last week, we butchered the first bull, and I picked up the meat yesterday. And as we speak, there's meat cooking for the show for tonight. So.
Absolutely amazing. Did he not get the memo about what you're supposed to do when you turn 65?
Yeah. No, they missed that memo.
I see.
The other thing I can add about Stuart, I mean, he's 93, but he's got a 10-year plan. So, he's not going to stop anytime soon.
He's 93 years old, and he has a 10-year plan.
Yes.
Yeah, he's amazing. I've known him for quite a while, and he's definitely on a mission here. There's no question about it. He wants consumers to be able to have access to this wonderful, nutrient-dense, delicious grass-fed beef. And it's very, very hard to come by. So I'm very excited. I think I'll be there tonight, hopefully, to get the first sample.
John, what is it, if we were to ask him, what's his passion?
He loves projects, Andy, and he's just not going to stop. I mean, he was a member of the Flying Farmers for 6 decades, and I think he still has his pilot's license. He goes up once a year to maintain that. his passion is just keeping busy and interested in good quality food and good health.
So on the side, he's a pilot?
Yes, yes.
Does he still have his license?
Yes, the plane sits in a hangar by the conference silo.
It does. I've seen it, Andy.
He's 93, and he still flies.
Yes.
He's amazing.
Well, my theory is, more and more, God meant for us to live to 120, and if we die a day sooner, we've screwed it up.
Yeah.
So, John, tell us why you're involved in this project. What's your passion with regards to sustainable food?
Well, I come at this from somebody who is a qualified foodie. I love good food, and I was trained as a chef. I'm not working full-time in that right now. I do a lot of different caterings and odd jobs, but I come at it from a food perspective. And one of the words, Pam, that you haven't used about our beef is that it's gourmet. And somebody asked me, well, what is gourmet? Well, gourmet actually refers to a test that's a standard test that's given. And the Devon beef consistently, beef to qualify as gourmet has to be under 4.2, and the Devon beef consistently scores under 3, down to as low as 2.2.
On what score? A measurement of what?
It's a Wessler. I can't think of the name of the test right now. I've got material at the show that people can look at, but it's called. So we're talking about it as beef beyond belief, and it's a high quality, nutrient dense, but it's certified gourmet as well. And that means, 2.2 you can cut with a fork.
What kind of reactions are you getting? Obviously, some people have been tasting this beef so far. What kind of reactions are you getting?
Well, actually, Pam, whoever gets the first taste today will be the first Canadian person, because it's only been tested. There's a place in New York State that we consulted with in terms of cooking and killing and tasting, but we have not had a taste yet ourselves.
So, really?
Yeah.
Wow. Okay.
Beef beyond belief.
Yeah.
I love that.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
And I've never heard of the term gourmet beef. I didn't know there was a measurement for it, so this is very interesting.
Okay, now this gets to the point. Mm-hmm. Okay, beef beyond belief. Tastes great. Is that the number one selling feature, would you say, John, is the taste?
Taste and the texture. It's if you look at, like, when I picked up the, I had the sirloin steaks cut an inch thick, and you can see just how well marbled it is with that yellow fat. And if they'd let me bring a barbecue inside, I would, I'd be barbecuing, but...
I often have dinner with Marilyn at the Malibu restaurant on Wonderland at Oxford, and Gus is the owner there, and we often chat, and we usually have the beef dinner. I'm going to be chatting with Gus. Is this grass-fed beef, and when are you going to get Devon? Is it Devon or Devon beef?
Devon. It's the North Devon is the breed, North Devons. So we call them the Old River Farm North Devon.
Okay, but is this a name you came up with, or is this...
No, they're North Devon. That's the breed, and they're grazing at the Old River Farm. So that all comes together.
Okay. And when I've had good grass-fed beef in the past, legitimately good grass-fed beef, it literally melts in the mouth. It's absolutely incredible. So I can't wait to try this beef, because he mentioned the word marbling. You don't have to give the cattle any kind of corn, for example, to get that marbling effect. If it's the right breed and you put it on grass, it's going to get that wonderful marbling effect as well.
Let me make the point in a very graphic way. Mm-hmm. If there was someone who no longer, who had dentures, shall we say, and they forgot to put in their dentures, could they eat this beef without their dentures?
Yes.
Yeah. There's a straight
it's so
answer.
So tender. It's so tender.
You said you can mm-hmm. cut it with a fork.
Yep.
Wow. Now, will this beef be for sale at the Wine and Food Show?
Well, because, Andy, this is the first herd, and this is actually the first beast that's been killed. Stewart's mission right now is to promote the breed and to get people to get to know the Devon. So we have a bull lending program. We have a variety of ways that people can get involved, and we're wanting to build the herd. So certainly our vision is that it will be for sale, and now we do have a freezer full on the farm that we're going to be using for, we call them come and sees. You played the Where's the Beef commercial, so our response to Where's the Beef is come and see. Come to mm-hmm. the Old River Farm. We're going to serve. We've had had a couple of these come and sees already. Anybody that's interested, our next focus, and this is why we're at the Wine and Food Show, is that we want the chefs in the area who are in the restaurant business to get to know our beef and so that they can begin. I mean, we're not going to have a lot of it in the
John, I have to jump in because we're coming down to the bottom of the hour, but we want to talk to you on the other side. Before we let you go, I got a couple of other questions, and I want to provide an opportunity for our listeners to talk to you about this beef beyond belief. I love the line. I love the line. Where's the beef? Well, it's at the Wine and Food Show this weekend. Your opportunity to talk to John about this beef from Glencoe, Devon beef. You've never tasted it, and apparently it's beef beyond belief. We'll be back with more in just a moment right here on London Today on News Talk 1290 CJBK.
Where's the beef?
Some hamburger.
Where's the beef?
Some hamburger places give you a lot less beef on a lot of bun.
Where's the beef?
At Wendy's, we serve a hamburger we modestly call a single. And Wendy's single has more beef than the Whopper or Big Mac. At Wendy's, you get more beef and less bun.
Hey, where's the beef? I don't think there's anybody back there.
You want something better. You're Wendy's kind of people.
When Pam Colleen, that's one of my all-time favorite commercials. It sticks with you years later. Clara Peller going, where's the beef?
If Wendy's would carry grass-fed beef, now we'd be getting somewhere.
Okay. we're talking about beef like, well, a beef beyond belief. I love that line, beef beyond belief. Now, I want to do something fun here, folks. As I mentioned in our last half hour, Marilyn and I often will have dinner at the Malibu restaurant, because it's a delicious meal for a reasonable price. Sounds like I'm giving him a plug. I really don't. I like the food, and I like Gus, the owner, who comes over and chats. So I want to, Pam, I want to bring Gus on and ask him a couple of questions and let John Field, who is going to rejoin us here in just a moment, give him an opportunity to make a sales pitch about this beef beyond belief. I understand John Field now had to go. So we're going to ask you to do the sales pitch. But joining us is Gus Cortesis, who is the owner of the Malibu restaurant at Oxford and Wonderland. Good morning, Gus.
Good morning. How are you?
Good. Say hello to Pam.
Hi, Pam.
Good morning, Gus. Are you going to the Wine and Food Show this weekend?
It's going to be too hard for me. I'll try, though.
Hey, he's got to run a restaurant. But let me ask you this, Gus. Pam is often on the air here. She's with us every Thursday. And she feels very, very strongly about beef. It should be grass-fed beef. Let me ask you, from your customers, do you ever get a request saying, is this grass-fed beef? I know I've never asked you that, but do customers ever ask? Oh, I'm sorry. We lost Gus. We'll get Gus back in just a moment because I know he wants to talk to us. John is back with us. Hi, John.
Hi, Andy.
John, in just a moment, I want to hook you up with my friend Gus, who owns the Malibu restaurant in London. Mm-hmm. And I want you to share with him a shameless plug for this new beef offered by this farmer from Glencoe. Because, I mean, these are the people, Pam, that we want to bring together. We want to bring together the people who are offering this beef with the people who are selling it to us in our restaurants.
Absolutely. If people don't know it's out there, they're not going to be looking for it. So, and this is very, very new, so it's nice to make these introductions.
Okay, terrific. And we want to bring into the conversation in just a few moments Glenn Black, who is a small flock poultry association promoter. He's with the Small Flock Poultry Association. But we have Gus back with us. Hi, Gus.
Hi, Andy.
Okay, so Gus, I want you to meet, his name is John Field, and he is a friend of a farmer near Glencoe who is offering at this Wine and Food Show this weekend a new kind of beef, which they call Beef Beyond Belief. So a very catchy name. And I know you have a roast beef special there at the Malibu restaurant. So, John, say hello to Gus.
Hello, Gus.
Hi, John. How are you?
I'm well, thank you.
Okay, John, I've really hyped this, so you're up to bat. Here comes the pitch. What is so special, Gus wants to know, about this beef beyond belief?
Well, you can't beat the taste and the tenderness. Those are the two top-selling features. And it will just outperform any other beef. It's not gamey, it's dense, and then as Pam has been saying, you get all of your nutrients lower in cholesterol, higher in the good fats, but all of that's there. It's tasty. It's extremely tasty.
You were saying this beef is so tender, you won't even need a knife. So, Gus, you can take, when people order the roast beef, you can take your knives and put them back in the cutlery drawer. You won't need them for this beef.
Well, I'd be glad to try it.
You better go to the show this weekend. Hey, listen, it's I've got the booth number for the show at the Western Fair. It would be booth number 308K, and I understand that there's 308K, but there's a new section at the Wine and Food Show that John was telling me about, and it's called the Man Cave. So this booth is going to be located in the Man Cave, but I still want ladies to go there. I sure am going to go there.
Awesome. Gus, I wonder if you have any questions for John as a restaurant owner. You say,
well, where can, like, I mean, I know I have to go to the show, but where can I get it? I'd like to try it.
Well, we're developing, Gus, a sales program, and right now it will be available at the farm gate. We butchered the first animal, so we're intending to look into box packages which represent roasts and steaks, and it'll be for sale. You can find us, on Google at the Old River Farm. Or at the show, I've got lots of promotional material that will give you the address.
John, John, if you were looking for a restaurant to debut your new product in London, I'm sure that you and Gus could have an interesting conversation.
Well, this is what we're hoping. We want to get the restaurant people involved. We've had the farmers out interested in looking into promoting the breed, but now we want to get it to the table, and we need chefs and we need restaurants to showcase our product. Yeah.
Gus, do you think you're open to the idea, at least?
Yes, I am, and I'll be glad to meet John and to come and see me.
Okay, now, Gus, let me ask you, when people order a meal at your restaurant, how high on the list of choices is roast beef?
Well, it's number one.
It's number one.
Yes, and you know that.
Yes, I know that. It's usually what I order, yeah. And I find that the beef that you have now, you can almost cut with your fork, but
yeah.
Apparently this beef is beyond belief, which is hard to believe.
Well, I like to hear, and you know, Andy, that's how I grow up, you know, like back home, that's where we fed our cows, just grass.
Yeah, that's the way it's supposed to be done.
You know?
Mm-hmm. Wouldn't you love it if all of your beef cattle that you serve at your restaurant had been raised on grass?
It would be nice.
Okay, yeah. So Gus, we'll put you in touch with the people at the Food and Wine Show. So thank you very much. Gus Cortesis is the owner of the Malibu restaurant. Okay, we have a caller who has a question. Jerry, go ahead.
Yes, am I on? Can you hear me?
You're on, Jerry.
Right. I just had a couple of real quick questions. The first question is the beef hung? Does it have to be hung for so many days for tenderness? And the other question I was going to say is how much is it going to sell for, or do they know?
Okay, there are a couple of questions. John, go ahead.
The hang time is less. I mean, it's almost unnecessary because of the tenderness. The beef that you'll be sampling at the show has not been hung, so we're using it to kind of test to see tenderness without hanging. But in consultation with our abattoir in Appen, the hang time for this beef will be less. As far as the cost goes, I mean, we really have to look at, those figures. We're just getting involved in the selling, but we're certainly going to, compete with with the market.
Are you going to sell sides of beef? Are you going to sell quarters, halves, anything like that?
Eventually, Pam, I think that's what will happen. But, this is the first herd, and we've got to build the herd. I think right now we're looking at probably boxing, so you would get a combination of steaks and roasts in a 30-pound box.
Jerry, can you imagine the taste of this beef beyond belief?
Well, I am a real meat eater, and I've had a lot of different kinds of beef and limousine, et cetera, and I just wondered, is it comparable to Kobe beef?
What kind of beef?
Kobe is the Japanese version.
Now, that's probably one comparison I couldn't speak to, but I'm going to be bold and say I think this beef would compare around the world because it is a world-class brand, and we've got information at the show that would talk about different tests. New Zealand, Australia, the United States, so it's popular around the world, And it wouldn't surprise me at all to see it compete highly with Kobe beef.
Jerry, I appreciate the call. Now, we want to say a word about our guest, John Field, who's a friend of this farmer, Stuart Simpson. Stuart's an amazing man in his own right. But, Pam, just say a word about John Field. He's a pretty amazing guy, too.
Right. This morning, I understand he's calling from a church where he does some mission work in terms of feeding the homeless men here in London. So, John, why don't we talk a little bit about your efforts in that department?
Sure. We've got a program that serves men in poverty in the Hamilton Road area for, this is, we're 7.5 years in. My job is to procure the food from people that want to donate it, organize the meal, prepare the meal, and we serve between 80 to 110 men who are in poverty. They're not all homeless. Some of them are homeless. Some of them are living in shelters. Some of them are living on the street. But it's a neighborhood initiative for these guys, and we serve a good hot meal as a way to get them to come out so that they can have access to other services in the community. So we have partnerships with housing support, income support, mental health support. They get nursing care through public health. So all of these people partner with us, and the guys come out for a meal, but they can also get their toenails done, or they can have their blood pressure checked, or those kinds of things.
That is absolutely.
What's the name? What's the name of the organization and the church?
Well, we run out of the Crouch Neighborhood Resource Center. That's the agency that sponsors this program, and it's run out of the Egerton Street Baptist Church.
Awesome. I wish we had more time to talk about that aspect of it. In just a moment, John, I want you to meet someone who is of a like mind, shall we say, when it comes to local, fresh, sustainable agricultural products. But Catherine wants to jump in with a question or comment. Go ahead, Catherine.
Yeah, so just listening to your comments about it, do you have a separate place where you do the, like the slaughterhouse, or does it go in with all the regular stuff? And so does that increase the risk of E. coli contamination? And the second question, I'm assuming it would never be mechanically tenderized like we've seen on Marketplace. That's it. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you, Catherine. Go ahead, John. Sorry. Go ahead, John.
Our beef will never come close to a mechanical tenderizer. And I mean, this you know, this animal was killed, you know, at a registered abattoir. So there's all of the safety, you know, issues are covered off. We want to look at instructing certain abattoirs. That's another initiative that we've got, because these animals are very docile, and we do not want to add any stress, even at kill time.
Mm-hmm.
So the least amount of stress the animal is in, the more tender the meat. I mean, so we're developing abattoirs who have an interest in that, and that's been part of the come and see at the silo.
Terrific. Before we let you go, we want you to meet someone very special. Pam, if you would introduce Glenn Black.
Right. Glenn Black is the president of the Small Flock Poultry Farmers of Canada, and he's working to help make sure that we can obtain free-range poultry that would be from the smaller flocks, not the factory farms here in Ontario. Good morning, Glenn. Thank you for joining us.
Oh, good morning.
Glenn,
thank you very much.
You've been able to hear part of our conversation?
Yes.
So you know what John is up to. I guess this is the poultry version of what John is doing to a certain extent.
Yes, it's a growing problem for not only Ontario, but Canadians from coast to coast to coast. Right now, Health Canada reports 7.6% of Canadian families can't afford the food they need to feed their families. And as rich as Ontario has been in the past, we're actually 11.8% here in Ontario, higher than the Canadian average. And it goes as bad as Nunavut is 28% can't afford the food they need. First Nation reserves that in the area around here, we have 7 First Nation reserves in and around Manitoulin.
That's the poverty angle. Let me focus, if we could, because of limited time.
Sure.
Let focus on the angle that where I think the two of you connect so beautifully, and that is you both have a passion for food that's grown in a non-factory model, local, and in the case of chickens, not in all those tiny little cages we hear all the horror stories about.
Exactly.
Tell us about your farm.
Well, we are new. We actually moved up from London I've been in London for the last 25 years and came here to Manitoulin 6 years ago. And at that point, we knew how to spell the word chicken and have since created a small flock poultry farm that we do chicken layers, meat birds, ducks, geese, and turkeys.
Why did you move to Manitoulin?
To get ready for this worldwide economic difficulties that we were heading into. I had been doing management consulting out of London for 25 years and saw the coming thing that happened in 2008.
Okay, let's get back to your chickens. What's so special about the way you raise chickens that end up on our dinner table?
Well, the we do that, they're free range, so they spend all night in protected from the foxes and coyotes inside the chicken coop, but during the day they get to come outside and be into the grass and the bugs and de-stress to be able to have their natural dust bath that they like to have. So it's a much more natural growing environment. And
terrific. Let me jump in with this question that I want to ask you and John Field. Compare the meat, because this is what it's all about. Compare the chicken that ends up on our dinner plate, Glenn Black, with the Small Flock Poultry Association of Canada, free-range chickens. They're not in cages. Compare the product that you produce to the product that most of us eat, and that is chickens from the small cages, and then we'll get John to do the same with his beef. Go ahead, Glenn.
Well, people report to us that there's no taste like a naturally raised chicken, where the stuff that's in the store tends to be almost plastic-like, very denatured in taste. And that's the reason why chicken is highly salted, far more than anywhere else in the world, to try and overcome that bland taste because of the factory farms that most people get stuck with. And being able to eat the grass and the natural occurring bugs and the seeds adds significantly to the nutrition. So if you look at the omega-3, omega-6 ratio in free-range pastured chicken is significantly better than the factory birds.
Mm-hmm. I have the top chefs, Andy, the top chefs want those pasture-raised chicken.
Really?
You know, and turkey, yeah, they prefer the taste. It's much superior in taste.
John Field, it's your friend Stuart Simpson who's got this new beef beyond belief at the Wine and Food Show this weekend. Same question. How does the beef that we, most of us, eat compare to the product that you're offering?
Well, I'd have to say the same as Glenn. You just can't beat the taste. And for a long time, I've used the same term. The, you know, the store-bought beef, sorry, guys, it's plastic. This is, you know, if you close your eyes and imagine roast beef, this is what it's supposed to taste like. It's definitely the taste, tenderness, far and away more tender. You know, the graining is different, so it's a denser meat, full of flavor.
Mm-hmm.
And let me ask you, Pam, about from a nutritional mm-hmm. point of view, how the products compare.
Right. When animals are outside on pasture, there's going to be more of the fat-soluble vitamins in the fat, which is essentially critical for all sorts of different functions in the body, including supporting the nervous system. So you're going to get more of the fat-soluble vitamins, very important, and you're going to get more minerals in the end product as well. So it's just a more nutrient-dense source of meat or chicken when the animal's been raised outside.
Real quickly, because we're almost out of time, let me ask you, Glenn Black, with the Small Flock Poultry Association of Canada. This is all very nice, but, you know, I happened to watch Little House on the Prairie last night. We can't really go back to that model of agriculture if we want to feed the world. What's your comment?
Well, I believe we can. Right now, Premier Wynne is wanting to double agricultural exports out of Ontario because there's jobs and also GDP to be gained there. And if we were to do it through the small flock model, we could be able to grow and export five times more chicken into the OECD nations of the world who are hungry for this food. But instead, the supply management system is quite comfortable with being a parasite on the Canadian public and charging us two to three times more for the chicken that we have to pay compared to what's available on the international markets or even from our neighbor to the south.
John Field, same question about beef. This beef beyond belief, the small farm module, could we feed the world?
If we teach people to think about a way of farming that is sustainable, I don't have any doubt that, you know, we can feed the world.
Okay. Remember when we had Graham Merriweather on the show a couple of weeks ago, and in his documentary, American Meat, basically he looked into that question and he said, we do have the land to do this type of agriculture. What we don't have is the workforce. We are losing farmers left, right, and center. We need to train people in terms of learning how to do this type of agriculture.
Okay, we have three things we have to cover in the 1 minute left, so we're going to have to be very brief. 10 seconds, Glenn Black, where can we find out more about the Small Flock Poultry Association of Canada?
Well, we have our blog on the internet, and just search for small flock poultry farmers, and there's lots of there to digest.
Sounds good.
Terrific. And John, about this Devon beef, beef beyond belief?
Google the Old River Farm, and you will have our blog space, which goes into great length to talk about the beef, the farm, and how you can get a hold of it, and us.
And I'm going to be at the man cave, and if there isn't any beef, I'm going to be very disappointed.
I got your beef ready.
Okay.
Do you allow women in the man cave?
Absolutely.
Okay. Terrific. Okay. And Pam, you have a couple of
right.
Sessions.
Actually, I'm teaching on this very subject. I've got my new nutrition boot camp coming up starting Saturday, February 15th. So the last two Saturdays in February, first two Saturdays in March, I'm teaching my nutrition boot camp at the downtown library. And you can find out more on my website, which is just my name, pamkilleen.com.
Glenn Black, thank you so much for joining us.
Great. Thank you.
And John Field, hey, what an incredible story about Stuart Simpson, the farmer who built a conference hall in a silo near Glencoe, which I drive through all the time. I'll tell you, next time I go through Glencoe, I'm going to the Tim Hortons and say, where's this beef? Where's the beef?
I think he's on Simpson Road. His name's Stuart Simpson. I think it's on Simpson Road that he lives. Yeah.
Really? 93 years old, and he's still flying planes.
You bet.
Absolutely amazing. Okay, 11 o'clock news when we come back. Speaking of something that's amazing. Oh, yes, we'd end it with the chicken dance. Thank you for that little touch, Tim. Okay, we're going to switch gears on the other side.